Welcome to Strictly Business, Variety's weekly podcast featuring conversations with industry leaders about the business of media and entertainment. I'm Cynthia Littleton, co-editor-in-chief of Variety. Today, my guest is Arthur Smith, chairman of Tinopolis Group US, which encompasses his A. Smith & Co. banner and other unscripted production companies. Smith's specialty is what he calls the big show, a large-scale reality production with elaborate setups and physical stunts. The kind seen in NBC's American Ninja Warrior and the Titan Games, and Fox's long-running Hell's Kitchen franchise. Smith faced a cruel blow last year when his company had six series poised to start production in April of 2020. But he found himself energized by the ingenuity his core team demonstrated in figuring how to get shows back on their feet in the midst of a global pandemic. He's quick to point out that all six series that went down in April were produced in the second half of last year. As Smith marks his 20th year as head of A. Smith & Co., he's also reached the 10-year anniversary mark of his sale to UK's Tinopolis. In our conversation, he discusses what the company has gained by teaming with a larger entity, and he reflects candidly about sometimes missing the environment from the era when he was coming up as an executive at MCA Television, Dick Clark Productions, and Fox Sports, a time when series orders could be landed on the strength of a title and a handshake. That's all coming up on today's episode of Strictly Business.
Arthur Smith, chairman of Tinopolis US and founder of A. Smith & Company, a very busy, unscripted production company that has been behind numerous hits, long-running franchises, things like Hell's Kitchen with a crazy character named Gordon Ramsay, and American Ninja Warrior, which sends everyday people through all kinds of incredible calisthenics and challenges for fame, glory, and prizes. It must be, Arthur, quite a time to be a producer with a long track record of producing really, really successful franchises at this moment with so much demand for content. What is it like to be A. Smith & Co. right now? I would imagine your phone is ringing off the hook.
Well, I'm very energized by it all. It is a great time to be a producer. And you know, I really think, you know, they talked about the golden age of television. I really think it's the golden age of unscripted television right now. I mean, there is so much happening and there are so many places to sell it. And, you know, the interesting thing about, you know, the unscripted business, let's say 10 years ago, there was always a time when things were in, game shows, music shows, and then there was a time when things were out, game shows, music shows were out. So now everything is in. Everything is in. There was a place to sell something. It's just about how you package it and how you get it out there, because the business has become more business-like. I mean, I remember years ago, and my, you know, our company is one of the older companies, 20 years old, A. Smith & Co. The Magical Elves, which is also under my purview, is also roughly 20 years old. But I remember 30 years ago when I was working at Dick Clark Productions, and I would sell something on a title. I would literally go in and pitch NBC When Stars Were Kids with a piece of paper, and we'd be doing the show within months. And that's changed. That is, you know, there is more steps, there is more discussion about deals, and that's changed. But on the positive front, there are, such a wide, diverse group of buyers right now, and there's such opportunity for producers if you have a project and you have a reputation, because you need the project and the reputation to get something made. There's a great opportunity. For me personally, I like a lot of things. You know, I was a sports guy, you know, I was with Fox Sports for 4 years before starting my company. I was an entertainment guy and a variety guy with Dick Clark. And so I've been, you know, going back between sports and entertainment, and it reflects in what we do, because we are all over the place. We do, you know, a wide variety of genres, you know, docs and docu-soaps and competition shows like Ellen's Next Great Designer or the Titan Games, and sports like American Ninja Warrior and docu-soaps like Welcome to Plathville on TLC. And so for me right now, I'm really liking where we are. I'm really liking the opportunity. And I think it's an exciting time. It is trickier, I will tell you. And I know you're going to ask me the tough questions about, you know, doing business in this era. But once you are able to get it sold, or once you're able to develop something, you do have a lot of opportunities to sell it.
How do you prioritize? Because again, I would imagine just from the conversations that I have with buyers, the most valuable thing is a showrunner, is a proven producer. How do you prioritize? Because I'm sure people want somebody of your experience to shepherd their big thing. How do you decide what you say yes to and what you say no, that's not quite for us?
Well, for me as a producer, because I mean, A. Smith & Co. is a company run by a producer. I'm a guy from the trenches who went to film school and TV school. You know, that was my upbringing. No matter how busy we are, I still need to be in the control room as much as possible. It's part of it's my outlet. It's my everything. Now, when you're a company of scale, you can't be there for everything. So you need to have people who are qualified. And we have a great staff of showrunners and current executives who watch over our shows. I still am on a number of our shows. I'm still on set on Hell's Kitchen every day because I want to be, and Gordon and I have this relationship. I was on set every day on Titan Games. I was on set every day on Mental Samurai. But, you know, also within our company, like I said, we have a number of superstars who are executive producers and who oversee. And, you know, over time, you know, when I first started the company with Kent Weed at the time, we did everything. But over time, we've added people and brought people in, and eventually the network gets comfortable with those people. But there's not a cut of a show that I don't see that if a rough cut's going to a network, I'm going to see it before. So I'm not day to day on everything, but I am on everything. And it is important. And I think that's, you know, so much of our work gets work, and so much of our reputation gets work. Mm-hmm. And so I feel the responsibility and the obligation to be there and to watch over it. And I love it. That's my passion. You know, I always say that development's a pain in the ass, but production is my joy, to develop it. And I develop everything just so we can get it made. Once it gets it made, I'm in heaven.
that's what keeps you going. Cause you have to love it. Otherwise where's the joy?
Yeah.
How are you finding, there's obviously so much demand, but how are you finding, like, how are budgets right now? Are you feel like there's much momentum in spending, especially in the unscripted area, as there is demand for, you know, multi-episode series?
I mean, listen, it's hard to come up with a general answer as it relates to budgets, because it depends on which buyer and sure, at what time. And I always believe that there are certain times in a network or a platform's history that they are dealing with different money. Sometimes they need to launch, and sometimes they're willing to spend, which is a very good time for a producer to sell.
Right. That's the meeting you want to be in. Huh?
Yeah, exactly. I always like when a network is starting, because I feel like they're dealing with different money at that time. Then there are networks whose business pro forma has changed. You know, Fox is a different network than it was when it was a part of a bigger company. And then there are, you know, mergers and deals that also affect your business, because, you know, when somebody acquires a number of networks, already being an owner of a number of networks, a number of times you get the business dealings of the acquirer and not the people you were in business with, if that makes any sense.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
So there's such an ebb and flow, and there's also, you know, the business has changed. I mean, you know, ratings aren't what they used to be in the broadcast world. So budgets are going to change, and the pressure on budgets are going to change. So, but like I said, there is one thing that, you know, that I, I, I am kind of enjoying at this time is that I, you know, we at A. Smith & Co. love to do the big show. We love the big show. We love our little shows, but we're also known for doing the big show. And,
right.
You know, there was a, you know, years ago, there always is and there always will be a limited amount of network real estate. There's just so many hours of prime time and such, just so many hours of prime time that they're going to allow or not allow, but have unscripted programming on their air. And, but now there are, you know, with the streamers and all the other platforms, there are a number of places to sell the big show, which is a bigger budgeted show. So, so we like that. We do like that.
After 20 years and now being part of Tinopolis, have you been able to move into an arena where some shows you're able to own or own a significant chunk of? Have you been able to diversify that way? Or would you say you're largely a work for hire?
You know, we're a blend. And you know, even prior to being part of Tinopolis, we were able to leverage deals where we maintained rights and maintained distribution. So it wasn't because of Tinopolis that we were able to do that. It started, like, I remember, you know, 2006 and 2007 closing network deals where we maintained ownership and format rights, et cetera. It helps that we do have a distribution platform or a distribution organization, I should say, mm-hmm. That is Passion. So, which is respected and does not only distribute Tinopolis programming, but distributes other companies' programming. So, it really comes down to what the show is and how it originated. You know, sometimes we'll get a call from a network and we develop something together. You know, it's a different type of deal. Sometimes they'll lay off a project on us or put us together with somebody else. That's a different type of deal. And then there's the ideas that we develop, you know, inside and we bring it to them. And that's a different type of deal. So, you know, like I said, I think it helps that we have the distribution company because we didn't before. But mm-hmm. we've been maintaining rights on certain things, you know, for quite some time now. So. So, yeah.
And I would imagine that ability is, you know, one of the things that has allowed you to prosper and, you know, to be around for 20 years and counting.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Those have been meaningful for
it. It has. Listen, our greatest, you know, sales tool is our track record. That really is our business. That has been the core of our business for a long time. You know, you mentioned long-running series like American Ninja Warrior season 13, Hell's Kitchen, which is season 20, is now airing. I hate that they're both on a Monday night opposite each other, but that's I guess successful. And but you know, there's also Unsung, which is in season 12, and you know, and there's a number of other ones that are going into multiple seasons. And you know, Top Chef on with the Magical Elves season 19, and Nailed It in season 4 or 5. I don't know. I'm not sure. I can't keep track, but you know, and they're good quality shows. You know, I A. Smith is where I spend most of my time, but I take a lot of pride in what's happening at the Magical Elves. You know, Casey Crowley and Joe Sharon have done such a great job as the co-CEOs, and you know, they've got two nominations in the competition category for the Emmy Awards with Nailed It and Top Chef. And, mm-hmm. You know, it's so great to see. And the great thing about both companies is that, you know, our culture is very similar in terms of nice places to work, good atmospheres, you know, diverse, respectful, and you know, it's great. We're having a really good time right now. Listen, the business is always tough, and there's always disappointments, and not everything works. But you know, the overall headline is that it's a good time.
What else? You mentioned the distribution company and that having that platform has been important. What else? What would you say have been the benefits of your sale to Tinopolis about 10 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, there have been some formats, like we did America's Worst Driver, which was based on a UK format. There have been a couple of others. You know, right now we're developing Idiot Abroad for a network. Which is based on a format. So formats from your partners are great, and we have a couple of things that are in play overseas. So that exchange is probably you know, one of the biggest benefits. And it's, you know, just the sharing of business dealings and partnerships. I'm now helping out Sunset and Vine, which is our sports company, on a major international sporting project because of my background in sports, and I'm on the board of that. So there's this great free exchange that's going on. I'd always like more from Europe and overseas. I wish they had more stuff for us. There's been a few. There's been a few, and you know, and I'm hopeful in the future there'll be more. Yeah.
Do you think is Tinopolis, you know, there was a wave of small companies being bought up by larger entities, Tinopolis, like Magical Elves, not that Magical Elves is a small company, but do you think has that moment kind of passed, or is Tinopolis still in the market for potential acquisitions?
You know, we're opportunistic. You know, we're not looking to acquire, but if there's some, we will look at anybody that's for sale and evaluate whether it makes sense. So it's all about quality. And you know, I was the first American company to be part of the Tinopolis Group. And when I started, they asked me, you know, what other companies would you think we should go after? And I always admired the quality of work that was done by the Magical Elves. And so it was a very pointed, like, let's go after them and let's try and get them to be part of us. It so happened at the time they were looking to be acquired and looking for a deal, so it worked out. It's about being opportunistic for us. It's not about we need to do this or we must do this. It's more about, you know, does it fit? Is it right? Does it make sense?
Hang tight, folks. There are more tales from TV's trenches to come from producer Arthur Smith after this break. And we're back with more from American Ninja Warrior producer Arthur Smith.
There's been, recently there has been a little bit of strain with Tinopolis and some of the companies, some of the people involved with some of the companies that they had purchased. Some strain with producers. Has that been challenging for you to navigate as both somebody who's a producer in the trenches and the head of Tinopolis US?
Well, you know, my relationship with Tinopolis has been great. You know, I've been with the, you know, part of the group as 10 years. You know, when people said, oh, you sold your company, I go, no, yes, I did, but I feel like I'm part of a bigger group. I'm now a part owner in a bigger group. So technically I'm still one of the owners, one of the members. Right. So, you know, it's yes, you know, there is the check that you get up front and then there is the remainder that you hope to get or hope to, you know, grow into something else. My relationship is solid. And, you know, for a lot of producers, you know this, Cynthia, from, you know, all the independents who have sold, a lot of them leave after 4 or 5 years.
Right.
You know, most of them do.
They go, you're an outlier at 10 years and counting.
You know, I'm happy. I mean, this is, you know, I love what I do. I love the shows that we do. You know, I came into this, you know, really focused on A. Smith. I'm happy to work with Casey and Joe, and I was happy to work with Dan and Jane when they were at the Elves too. Mm-hmm. So, it's been great. I mean, listen, you know, COVID was a very difficult time. It was a difficult time, not just for us, but for a number of media companies. And there was a lot of issues with cash flow and everything else. It hurt us like it hurt everybody else. The U.S. business has always been thriving, but, you know, we're part of a bigger group. And, you know, it wasn't easy, and it was a rough time. You know, March to July of 2020, when we were all stuck in neutral. I mean, thankfully, we had a lot of shows in post, but there were six shows just within A. Smith & Co. that were about to start in April. I mean, it was incredible. Like, April was like a show month for six shows. Now, the good news, the great news, actually, is those six shows all happened between July and October. Figured out a way to make all those shows. And it was American Ninja Warrior. It was Welcome to Plathville. It was Mental Samurai, which we shot in Portugal and flew in 100 contestants and did it in Portugal. There's a story behind that. There was Unsung, there was American Gangster, there was the Ellen's Next Great Designer, which we did for HBO Max. The interesting thing is that, you know, all those shows are kind of different in a way. One's a game show, one's a docu-soap, one's a sports entertainment. So we figured out a plan on how to make all those, how to make all of those during this time. And it was tricky. It was tricky. And I remember, you know, Cynthia, I remember having a meeting, like it was yesterday. What a lousy day yesterday was. Like it was yesterday. And where we sat down, actually a Zoom meeting. And I said to our production management, we have two amazing women who are EVPs of our company, who are heads of our production, Shay and Kristen. And we were sitting around and we say, you know, we're stuck here and the network's not going to figure out how we're going to make these shows happen, but they want us to make these shows happen because they've ordered them. So we have to figure it out. So what are the things that we can do? How do we create our own safety measures? How do we create our own safety Bible? How do we create a bubble? How do we test and how do we do this? And we did. And we did. Ninja was one of the first big scale shows that we did in a dome stadium in St. Louis and created our own bubble with the hotel across the street from the stadium. And, you know, it was good business. It was like we can sit around and say, oh, geez, what do we do? Or we could try and figure it out. And that's right. How we got back into production.
How did the network help you? Did they step up with, because all that, you know, testing and PPE and additional housing and all that, that must have cost a fortune.
It, you know, listen, it added a cost to every show and the networks were by and large great. Great. They really understood the issue. They were, you know, I remember, you know, how appreciative, you know, NBC was for us delivering Ninja Warrior. I mean, they were impressed and they were supportive. And certainly they were also cautious because for all of us, you know, as much as I wanted to get into production, you know, it's safety first. These are people who have been part of our family for years. And you know, it was always about we have to do this safely. How do we do it? How do we protect everybody? And I would say the safest place during COVID was being on a set. I always felt good being on a set. I felt more safe there than going to a store. I mean, so
I can imagine knowing that you had set your own protocols and that they were being applied.
Yeah, I mean, we were you know, tested going in, tested every couple of days. Everybody wore a mask. We you know, the control room. The funny thing is, the control room for American Ninja Warrior was so massive. You know, because we had, everybody was so spread apart. It was funny. I remember walking into the control room and it was like, oh my God, they were like way off in the distance. And we all wore headsets. We all wore masks. We communicated. We didn't, you know, normally in a control room, you just lean, you talk to the guy beside you. Now you're talking on a headset. So it's a little trickier. And, you know, we created these zones, these special zones where people, you can only go in this zone and you can only go in that zone. And I mean, I'm sure you've heard the stories and it's evolved and certainly we are not the only ones. I mean, everybody did it. It's amazing to see what the community was able to do. But I listen, I'm very proud of what we were able to do. And like I said, you know, we had these six shows and I was going, oh my God, you know, I don't know if they're going to come back. I don't know. And then we figured out how to do them. And all those shows that were put on hold all ended up being done. So
that's a rare, I mean, many people, you know, things people were happy to get half of their slate back up on its feet within a few months. That really speaks well of your organization. Let me ask you, is there anything, any innovations or any learnings from the having to produce in the height, in the teeth of the COVID of 2020, anything that you've learned that you will continue even when blessedly these pandemic conditions ease?
Well, yes. Listen, you know, as much as I am proud of what we've been able to do, it's not optimal. It's not, you know, it's functional, right? It's functional. You get it done, you find a way to do it, but it's much better not dealing with this stuff. But the one thing, you know, that we had to do is we had just completed the Titan Games season two, which we shot in February. And we came back and our other show, American Ninja Warrior, could not be done. And it was supposed to go on the air in May. So all of a sudden we had an air date of the Titan Games, which was several months away, all of a sudden got moved up dramatically. And we were on, you know, they wanted us on the air within 2 or 3 months. And, you know, we weren't set up to edit remotely. We were set up to, so we had to figure that out on the fly. And, you know, there was this 1 week where we were trying to figure out this system on how to do it. And it's difficult. It's very difficult with producers who now have to set up Zoom meetings to meet with the editor and, you know, but remote editing, I think is one of the things that we've learned, has been a benefit, because I think there are things that you'll want that editors may choose to edit remotely, or you, in a pinch, you could send something to somebody that, you know, if you have a fast turnaround on a show and that needs to be edited remotely. So I think that's one of the benefits I think that's going to stay with us, is that, you know, I think a lot of our shows will continue to be, at least, if not completely edited remotely, at least partially edited remotely. And at least for the foreseeable future, most of our stuff, if not all of our stuff, is being edited remotely right now. There's also, I also like was thinking about this, there's probably some international production that you would do with multiple countries where Zoom and edit remotely would come into effect, and it would just be much easier to do because we learned how to do it because we had to. I don't know what the show is, but now I'm thinking.
There is, I think that we're just starting to scratch the surface of the innovation and the on the fly, just ingenuity that it took to create these kinds of workarounds. And, you know, you and the networks had the ultimate motivation. You didn't want to have dead air, as they say.
We didn't want to have dead air. And one of the things that we also decided that we didn't want to do is we didn't want to do COVID programming. You know, we wanted to provide programming that didn't feel like it was a Zoom show. And listen, there were a number of things that they had no choice. The talk shows, the talk shows and the daily shows, the syndicated shows, they had no choice. It looked like a Zoom show. It felt like a Zoom show. So, you know, when you watch Metal Samurai from Portugal, it looks like it was done in a studio in LA. You watch, you know, our docu-soap, Welcome to Platteville on TLC, it looks like season one. Season two looks like season one. So that was a goal of us, because we felt like, you know, people wanted to just watch the show. They didn't want to be reminded of what was going on.
Right. Right. Arthur, you have, as you said, you've been doing this a long time. We've been doing a lot of compare and contrast. I would love to know, you know, going back even further, you know, pre-COVID also seems like a long time ago, but go back 10 or 20 years ago and tell me something about the way business was done or the way production was done 10, 20 years ago that you miss, and something that you don't miss, something that you know, that you don't have to do anymore in the present day that you don't miss.
What I miss about what was going on 10 to 20 years ago was the speed in which things used to happen. Things just happened much faster. You know, I talked about 30 years ago selling a show on a title, and you know, you literally walked in there. But you know, when we first started our company, it wasn't unreasonable to pitch a show to a network and beyond within a number of months. You know, be on the air within a number of months. Mm-hmm. So now things just move slower. There's more steps. There's more discussion. There's more negotiation. You know, business affairs is significantly slower. And maybe the deals are more complex, or maybe people are just more analytical, or but I do miss it. I do miss it because I, you know, we're to me, it's like when you develop an idea, you know, you're developing it for the time that you're living in, and you want it to get on because you feel the timing is right. And it's just, you know, you're passionate about it. So, you know, the idea of spending, you know, years in development, or, you know, a long period of time in development, it's just harder. And the other thing is, you know, when you spend a lot of time in development, things happen. People change networks. People lose their jobs. And so, and I, I'm sure every producer has lived through this. You have a show, you have someone at a network who loves it. The show's been in development a long time, and then he leaves or she leaves, and then you and then your project dies. And that's, you know, that's besides the frustration of waiting for your show to get through all these steps and everything like that. There's is if it's not in production, you may not necessarily be making it because you know there are other factors that are completely outside of your control, or they get acquired. A deal happens and then they stop making deals. You know, they stop doing business because they're in that state of you know, being acquired and not sure in what direction they want to go to.
Right. So, that's something that is breaking out all over these days. So
Right. And by the way, it's affecting business. It is. You know, anybody who's in business with someone who's being acquired, I'm not mentioning who and what, but you can figure it out.
There's some big ones out there, yeah.
Yeah, right. You're right. So it does affect the next time you speak to them because they're coming at it from a different place. So spent a lot of time on this, so you can see it really bothers me. The speed in which things used to happen was better. What I don't miss is you know, a much smaller group of networks you can sell shows to.
Right.
So I'm kind of used to this now. It'd be hard to go back to, you know, the big four and a few cable networks who did unscripted programming. So, because that's what it was. That's what it was like. There was only, you know, there was the big four with a limited amount of real estate and all of us trying to grab it. And then there were a bunch of cable networks who did unscripted programming. Some who dabbled in it, but not to the degree of which it is now. The other thing that I don't miss, and the thing that I'm kind of happy to see, is I think the business has evolved in terms of how it treats people. I just think that people are more conscious of how of being more respectful and thinking about the importance of diversity. And it's something that, you know, at our company are, you know, priorities with us. It's one of the reasons why I wanted to start a company is that I love production so much. And I wanted to create an environment where people felt good and respected. And I'm happy to see that. And it's not like, you know, I don't want to get too preachy here, but but it is something that I'm enjoying about now and what I don't miss about some of the things that happened, you know, 20 or so years ago. And I'm happy to see it evolving and everyone could do better, but it's good to see that we have evolved. We could always do better.
Signs of progress are good.
Right. Yes.
Arthur, thank you very much for your time and for letting me lob a lot of tough questions at an independent businessman, but I do really respect the expanse of your catalog and just, you know, your longevity. We've all seen really successful companies come and go. It takes something to be, you know, to be around for 20 plus years. So.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I really enjoyed it. I love talking about our business. You know, it's fun and it's always evolving and it's always changing. And, you know, for me, still, there's still no greater joy than you know, making a show. And sometimes it's hard, but you know, it's so rewarding.
Thanks for listening to Variety Strictly Business. Please be sure to leave us a review at Apple Podcasts. We love to hear from listeners. And be sure to tune in next week for another episode of Strictly Business.